Good evening, and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. Mayor Brandon Johnson makes an emotional plea for a budget proposal stuck in a stalemate.
If you've never gone hungry, you wouldn't know why I have that urgency. If you've never opened up your refrigerator and there's nothing in it.
Johnson swats away a counterproposal from a group of Alder people opposed to his corporate head tax, saying they're playing games with the working people of the city.
It's not my preference. If somebody is a danger, I do not want them on electronic monitoring.
The Cook County State's attorney says the system needs to be re-examined after a Chicago man released on electronic monitoring allegedly set a woman on fire on the CTA.
Our federal partners took these concerns seriously, acted decisively, and delivered a first step toward accountability.
The Trump administration is using its funding as a cudgel to force Northwestern to enact their policy preferences.
Northwestern inks a controversial deal with the Trump administration to end a federal investigation and restore millions in funding. Meanwhile, some Chicago Alders do agree on a hemp ban, passing it out of a key committee despite pushback from business owners. Attorneys move to drop a use-of-force case over immigration agents roughing up protesters and press. But the Trump administration faces a new suit demanding all the footage of the raid on a South Shore apartment building.
And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Michael Liptrot of Block Club Chicago, our very own Heather Sharon, A.D. Quigg of the Chicago Tribune, and Alden Lowry of WBEZ. Thank you all for being here. Let's get right to it. So, Heather, we saw a group of aldermen release a rival spending plan that closes the city's budget gap, they say, without that controversial head tax. What did they propose?
Well, they proposed raising garbage fees and moving a whole bunch of things around. It's a very complicated proposal, but it essentially would nearly double what Chicagoans pay every month to have their trash and recyclables hauled away, and that would make it possible for them to sort of pay more towards the city's pensions, reduce sort of a reduction in efforts to use property taxes for blight renewal, and get rid of that corporate head tax, which they say will stifle growth and make it impossible for Chicago companies to hire new employees.
Well, you know, as we heard that, you know, the mayor really is pushing back against that plan, not just sort of on the moral terms here, but his administration says this rival plan relies on bad numbers.
Yeah, so this plan relies on basically being able to collect $150 million more in debt than the city anticipates. And it says that the mayor's revenue proposals are too conservative and that the city can count on getting another $31 million from various taxes. Now, the city's top finance officials say that this would be extremely dangerous for the city and could put the city in a very risky financial position. And they say you can't build a budget on vibes. You've actually got to build a budget on numbers, but that's really the problem here, right?
Right.
Because nobody agrees on what the numbers are, and one side doesn't trust the other to be accurate and fair with it.
Well, and this caucus in particular was trying to do things that they said would avoid a credit downgrade.
Right. Right.
And then the answer in return from the mayor's office is, no, what you want to do would also lead to a credit downgrade. So some of the things they want to cut, the mayor had planned to basically reduce an advanced pension payment. That was a huge credit positive to
right.
the city. And several other things. They're like, we can't keep doing these gigantic TIF surpluses. It's just not sustainable. We need more structural solutions, but we are not at the middle yet. I don't even know what the next couple weeks is going to look like.
Well, you know, Alden, to the idea, though, that this head tax that the mayor's saying, this is sort of a moral stand here, that we can't budget on the backs of working people, that the rich, these corporations need to step up and pay more. Why do you think that message isn't resonating, even with some alders who are typically allied with the mayor?
Well, I mean, I long established, I think, politically that the head tax was a bad idea. When Mayor Rahm Emanuel essentially kind of got the council to support that back in 2012, they phased it out, I think, by 2014. And I don't know if we've heard any mention of the head tax until recently. And I think maybe more so out of a necessity of a major revenue source than anything else. I think the appetite politically for it has really died. The mayor, though, this does speak to his principles. You know, he pushed back on this notion of doubling the garbage tax because, you know, hey, this is going to hurt working families. We heard some of it in the open. And there was much more that he said in his very passionate speech about this. He thinks people who have a higher income need to contribute more, and the head tax is one way to do that.
It's interesting, especially, like I said, people who are higher need to contribute to it, but also the question of does the city of Chicago have the leverage to make such assertions when it comes to businesses leaving? Right. And thinking about as far as particularly post-pandemic,
right,
with so many businesses not using office spaces, leaving the city as a whole, is that the gamble to lean on right now?
I'm interested to see, AD talked about what the next couple of weeks are going to look like. I'm really interested to see how the mayor plays this. He's spoken to his passion, but I'd kind of like to see what he's going to do politically. He's got a little bit of leverage, very little bit, because he can veto an alternative plan, and the council would need 34 votes to overturn it. He only needs 26 votes in anything that he proposes to pass. So how does he line up the votes to get to that lower number? And to keep the council from getting to that higher number. I don't know, but I think that's where his energy should lie.
Well, you know, and it's interesting to that point, AD, you know, alder people on multiple sides of this debate, we've been hearing a similar refrain that, like, okay, we need the mayor's folks to come to the table. You know, we saw this in an issue with that messy budget debate last year. Were these not lessons learned about compromise?
No, I mean, and from the beginning of the budget process, even back to the summer, we heard aldermen say over and over, I just don't trust this administration. Heather heard this too, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Even the revenue estimates for things, like, a lot of people were even doubtful about why $100 million even for the corporate head tax? Like, they couldn't even trust the revenue estimates. What is complicating this, I think, is also a lot of the pressure that the Chicago Teachers Union is putting on.
Right.
A lot of aldermen, we saw Lori Lightfoot kind of tried to do this during her budget. She set up a website that was like, here are the aldermen who were opposed to this. And it backfired. It, like, she lost some support from aldermen. I think I've spoken with aldermen who feel like CTU's tactics are making it harder to reach a consensus.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too. You know, it's this idea of why we're so polarized in this country. We're not operating on the same set of facts. If they're not operating on the same budget numbers, that puts a lot of pressure on folks. You know, Heather, some of the savings in this rival plan also require labor unions to agree to reduction in benefits for their members, who make up about 90% of the folks who work for the city. Do you really see any scenario where a union makes those kinds of significant concessions?
Certainly not in time for an agreement that could go into place on January 1st. And there's this report that the Johnson administration commissioned. It cost the city $3.5 million. It was done by Ernst & Young. And a lot of alder people were hoping that this report was going to give them a roadmap to be able to eliminate the head tax and sort of cut fat that would not impact city services or that people would not see that reduction. There were no magic beans in that report, unfortunately, and there is no painless way to sort of find an extra $100 million, and I think...
An extra $1 billion.
Yeah,
or
right.
Sure, yeah, why not? We'll just make up money. It doesn't, it's all made up.
It's not real.
Yeah, so, you know, when that didn't materialize, when that Ernst & Young consultant didn't come to the city council and say, yes, the Johnson administration has ignored all of these really easy proposals to avoid this corporate head tax that you all hate,
yeah.
I think everybody was sort of left, well, what do we do mm-hmm. now? And that's really where we've been for the last several weeks.
Yeah, it's very, so what now kind of a moment for folks.
Well, and I think it's really important that people understand that the city cannot operate like the state does. We in Illinois have gotten very used to the state missing the budget deadline and just continuing to operate until they get their stuff together. If the city does not have a budget by the end of the year, employees stop getting paid, trash stops getting picked up, the city grinds to a halt, and that, I know I am so tired of this word, is unprecedented, and nobody will know what happens after that.
Can I vote for something precedented to happen, please?
Indeed.
It's definitely, when we think about, like you said, the prospect of a city government shutdown is definitely something we never heard of, and it's going to be something years from now looking back. When it comes to that pivotal campaign promise from Johnson of not raising property taxes and how big of an influence that's going to have on this term, that promise to not raise property taxes and standing by that promise in the middle of all of this.
Yeah. Well, turning to some other news, because there are things going on other than the city budget, believe it or don't.
I do not.
I know you don't. We've got a new chief judge here in Cook County in Charles Beach, as well as state's attorney Eileen O'Neill Burke, marking her first year in office. They're both looking at changes to electronic monitoring, especially after that horrific attack on the CEA. There's going to be a CTA. There's this task force that's been put together. But, you know, AD, lots of blue ribbon task forces come and go. Does it feel like there's a real sense of urgency around getting something done? Or is this more folks saying, well, we need to demonstrate the work here?
Both Charles Beach and Eileen O'Neill Burke have said there are probable changes that we can make to the Pretrial Fairness Act now that it's been in place for a bit. What that looks like, I have no idea, but obviously an attack like this is a very good catalyst for things like that. I think there's going to be a lot of reviews as to how he was let out on electronic monitoring after having so many charges previously. But of course, this will take a lot of negotiating with state legislators to get something done.
Well, you know, and you have to ask the question, too, you know, how much was this sort of an outlier attack versus indicative of major problems in the system?
Yeah, I mean, I think there have been some criticisms of electronic monitoring for a while. And at one time, there was questions around how accurate the actual monitors might be. There was one story about a gentleman who was supposedly away from home when, in fact, he even recorded himself being at home. And there's still, I think, a tinge of the sense of electronic monitoring is kind of like this crutch that perhaps the system may fall back on when they're stuck in this situation of, well, do I detain somebody or do I not detain somebody in the era of no cash bail? So there is a possibility that even with this horrific thing, and it may be an outlier, but maybe this is a moment for us to kind of step back and say, is there a way that we could make this system work better?
Yeah, definitely something. When you think about Charles Beach coming into being chief judge, the precedent that you set as far as the tone that he started his term with.
Well, and he's now managing electronic monitoring after Sheriff Tom Dart was like, all
his
yours.
Hands of it. Yeah. Have fun. All right, well, Heather is our resident wildcat, I have to ask. This $75 million deal with the Trump administration, investigations over allegations of anti-Semitism, which many students and faculty dispute. Were you surprised to see Northwestern strike this deal?
Well, it's clear that the university was under an immense amount of pressure, and the real issue was money, right? They had had nearly $800 million in federal grants and research sort of shut down. And I think that the university president said, look, if we can spend $75 million over the next 3 years to free up $800 million, that's the right thing to do for the university. They will face a lot of hard questions from many alum and students about whether this agreement essentially sacrifices the rights of trans students to sort of get to that, because there are parts of this agreement that require the university to take steps to essentially say, we're going to ensure that there are same-sex dorms and same-sex sports, and that there will be a lot of questions about how that is implemented and whether people on campus suffer because of it. And that, you know, we heard, you know, sort of people say this is what the Trump administration wants. They're using their sort of power of their purse to do that. And does it set a precedent for other universities, I think, will be a big question.
Yeah, especially because, you know, major universities like Northwestern, they rely on this massive federal research funding. It doesn't feel like there's another apparatus coming forward. There are only so many, you know, Bill Gateses that are willing to fund these sorts of endeavors. So you have to ask yourself, where does it go from here? Mm-hmm. Michael, the D.C.-based legal group called Democracy Forward, they're suing the federal government over this raid on a South Shore apartment complex, you know, essentially saying this was just designed for propaganda videos. We want to see the full footage. Government won't release it despite a FOIA request. Based on the reporting we've heard so far on this raid, how damning could these full videos be to sort of the immigration enforcement efforts?
It could show a lot as far as the tactics and how the Trump administration has manipulated footage to make it seem like there was the potential for anything coming out of that South Shore complex. And even now, where we're seeing signs and notices on people's apartments for them to now leave the complex, it's just a lot. And thinking about the position that these tenants were put in, and the fact that you had people who were ripped out of their homes, put on the street, and families that were just manhandled in that way for the sake of appearances. And to the broader Operation Midway Blitz, so much done just performatively to position the Trump administration to be able to say, look, we were getting the worst of the worst when it comes to illegal immigrants. And the reality is going to come out that these were largely black and brown children and families that were being targeted, and no true precedent for the raid.
You know, Alden, WBEZ and the Sun-Times, you all have done extensive coverage of the use of force tactics by immigration agents, many of them quite risky. Were you surprised, given all that, to see the coalition suing over the use of force on press and demonstrators move to drop their case for now, or is this sort of the smart legal move here?
Yeah, I think the sense is that the case itself, the imminent danger that was relevant here, was no longer there. Commander Bovino and his forces largely left the area. There's still some ICE enforcement that's happening here, but not nearly to the degree that there was. So the smart legal move was, hey, you know, we don't really have a case at this point. You know, we wanted relief. We have relief because they've left. The thing, though, I think that is important to remember is that, you know, the promise is that they're going to return, and that right. They're going to return with more. And so I think this situation at least is could be a forerunner for some potential legal action in the future.
Yeah, and of course there's this argument, AD, from the federal attorneys saying, well, if you move to dismiss, we can't ever bring this back. The judge, though, appeared fairly skeptical of that.
Yeah, I'm a member of the News Guild. Like, the first email we got was like, we've withdrawn this for now, but we are ready to do it again if and when they do come back. The thing I'm going to be watching, aside from whether there's another legal suit, is do they come back in March around primary season? Mm. And what kind of impact does that have on people's voting habits, that they do feel like they are safe to go out and vote, or their families are safe to go out and vote, or folks, I mean, we had so many reports, BEZ sometimes, we did, about just people being afraid to leave their homes generally.
Yeah.
So if they're back in March, I'll be very interested to see how that intersects with primary season.
Which Governor J.B. Pritzker has been warning us to expect, so we will see if that comes true. Another legal matter, Heather, we learned this week the city's going to trial in the case of a man shot by CPD at a CTA Red Line station. Going to trial, a bit of an unusual move for a case like this.
It is. The officer who shot Ariel Roman in 2020, this was one of the first sort of, you know, pandemic area social media videos that went viral, was actually criminally charged for her actions in connection with this incident. She was acquitted after a bench trial, and you have a finding by the Civilian Office of Police Accountability that the officer's actions in this case violated the city's use of force rules, and the other officer involved was actually suspended for a year. This is not typically the kind of case that city lawyers like to ask a jury to decide. It will be an interesting test of what we hear from many more conservative and moderate alder people, that the city should be taking more of these cases to trial and sort of, you know, fighting all the way. I will note that the last time the city took a police misconduct trial case to trial, they ended up with a $120 million verdict that is now on appeal.
As I recall, the largest of its kind.
Indeed.
Ever handed down, so certainly not something that they're looking to get a repeat on.
No.
Michael, we did see some alder people come together this week to pass out of committee a ban on hemp, though its future is far from certain here. Mm-hmm. It's also something that the feds are looking to ban in about a year. So why do you think there's this urgency to tackle it locally now?
I think, especially in context, when it comes to the federal ban, the idea of getting ahead of it when it comes to this coming down. And also the question of how hemp is being politicized, of the threat to children on the anti-hemp side, mm-hmm. versus it being a help for anxiety and chronic pain on the pro-hemp side. And the question of, when it comes to a lot of restaurants who aren't seeing as much alcohol sales, and a lot of with the Illinois Restaurant Association really saying that some hemp providers may go out of business overnight if this ban passes, It's definitely something to it's definitely a lot that can be politicized with it when it comes to, if this ban passes and these restaurants or hemp providers were to close overnight and the federal ban is coming anyway, would this really change much?
Yeah.
And the question of, from a state level and a city level, what power does Illinois and Chicago have in context with the federal ban to begin with? And I think a lot of people, especially when medical professionals are recommending kind of a compromise
right.
in terms of people 21 and over, similar to alcohol, tobacco.
Right, it's not all pain and anxiety. Sometimes
right.
it's just you enjoy the beverage.
Right, right. And something of like an adult being able to use their own free will to decide to partake in hemp the
right.
same way someone can more traditional forms of weed. Compared and children not being able
yeah.
to have access to it. And that sort of compromise versus an outright ban. So there's a lot of politicizing that can be done and a middle ground be found. But in context with the bigger federal ban, it's the question of will either way, if this ban doesn't pass and the federal ban passes anyway, would it matter? Because a year from now, if the federal ban passes to begin with,
right.
it's going to be hemp is going to be banned regardless.
All right, something else that's very high right now, property taxes. Oh, I had to do it.
You nailed
All right,
it.
AD, the Cook County Board of Review, they've announced the exact details. They're reopening the appeal window for homeowners who saw a huge hike in their property taxes. Not going to take effect immediately, though, but tell us about the details there.
Right, so the Board of Review typically has, like, very narrow windows per township for folks to appeal their property assessments. This is not appealing your bill. This is appealing the assessment the assessor initially gave you. Because bills were so crazy, they wanted to do something to grant some relief. That window is open until the 12th. You can kind of add to your case, present evidence like comps through the 22nd. This might, if it's granted, give you a break on your 2026 bill. And it's only for people who haven't appealed before. But again, I've never written so many things about property taxes in such a short amount of time.
And I'm sure you're thrilled.
I am, and it's such an important, and it's like, it's colored the budget. It's going to color these primaries. It's just coloring the way people are feeling about inflation and everything costing a ton.
Yeah.
So I feel like everyone feels like they have to do something, even if it doesn't kick in right away.
Well, and speaking of those primaries, we saw the very influential Chicago Federation of Labor endorse county assessor Fritz Kagi's opponent, Pat Hines. Was that a surprise at all?
Yes and no. The CFL has not backed Kagi in the previous two elections. This cycle generally has been kind of a surprise because the Cook County Democratic Party decided not to endorse Kagi either. It's going to be an interesting contest to see if the CFL's foot soldiers and money can go up against Fritz Kagi's personal fortune, which has helped him in election after election and help his allies as well. I have not seen the business community in a huge way come out yet, but I think a lot of the stuff is going to heat up at the start of the new year.
That's always when things get going,
yeah.
just when it gets extra freezing.
Mm-hmm.
We're almost out of time, but Heather, the last thing the mayor needs right now is another headache. He's got one anyway, and it is wrapped in a bow. This is the city putting crowd restrictions on the Chris Kindle Market at Daly Plaza. What gives?
Well, it has become an incredibly popular destination for Chicagoans and tourists, and the city said it was unsafe to allow that many people to try to cram into a very small part of Daly Plaza. So they limited the number of people who could come in, and that destroyed some of the business vendors and said, please, you know, lift those limits. So the city said, go ahead, we'll let more people in. So I think the limit now is 2,500 people.
Which
at
is
any
still
one
lower
time,
than it was during COVID,
which
right?
Is lower, yeah. But if you've been recently, I personally do not enjoy crowds like that. And you really sort of can't, you know, it is very, very crowded. And we heard the mayor suggest this week that perhaps it has just outgrown Daly Plaza and needs to be moved somewhere else. Where that somewhere else would be with similar access and foot traffic, I think the devil is in the details.
Or I vote
the
Pedway.
Christmas
yeah, Pedway, perfect. No,
yeah.
The devil is always in the details, but you have put me in the holiday spirit, so thank you for being here, but we are out of time. So our thanks to Michael Liptrot, Heather Sharon, A.D. Quigg, and Alden Lowry. And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Tonight's presentation of Week in Review is made possible in part by Ann and Rich Carr, BNSF Railway, and Francine and Dr. Anthony Brown. Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
Before we go tonight, we want to remember a friend and frequent guest of this program who died this week, former Chicago Tribune editor and publisher Bruce Dold, a Pulitzer Prize winner who made it from reporter to the top job over his 42 years at the paper. When this program celebrated its 20th anniversary in 1998, he was number three in the show's Hall of Fame with a whopping 110 appearances and many more in the years since. He was also here for our 40th anniversary, where he expressed confidence in the future of reporting.
The younger people that we have coming up are at least as dedicated to it as we were when we were young and coming up, because they know the challenges of the industry. They know they're going to face things that they wouldn't face if they walked into an insurance office and worked there. So I give them a lot of credit for sticking with it and still seeing the great value in journalism.
Thanks, Bruce. He was not just a Pulitzer winner. He was also a consummate gentleman. Bruce Dold died Wednesday. He was 70 years old. We also want to take a moment tonight to wish a speedy recovery to our trusted and talented colleague, Fletcher Garrett, a mainstay of WTTW's engineering department. Get healthy soon, Fletcher. We miss you. And that's our show for this Friday night. Be sure to check out our website for the very latest from WTTW News. Now for the Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay informed. Have a great weekend. All right, Michael, you just put out a story this week that's a great change of pace from all the heavy news. Tell us about Bandwidth Chicago.
Yes, Bandwidth Chicago. Friday before Thanksgiving, they opened their new headquarters and performance center over in Garfield Park. They've been around for about 13 years, coming out of Learn Charter School. And really, they provide after-school opportunities to get involved with the arts, music, and just really good stuff for the community. They work with Marillac St. Vincent's, and overall, they're going to start programming in February, so be on the lookout if you want to get involved with Bandwidth Chicago. Do some of their vocal classes, drumming, dancing.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, wishing all a happy and healthy holiday season.